Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
22 years ago, two priceless manuscripts written by Charles Darwin were stolen from the library at Cambridge University. Scholars and detectives were mystified, dead end after dead end, students waterboarded, confessing to crimes they hadn't committed, a breakdown of civil dignity, many, many PhDs on the subject. This year, the notebooks were returned with a simple note saying, "This is The Gargle. All of the news, none of the politics. We are the Sonic Glossy Magazine to the Bugle's audio newspaper of visual world. I am your host, Alice Fraser, and your guest editors for this week's edition of the magazine are Jos Norris and Josh Gondelman. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you.
Pleasure.
I feel very welcomed. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm also glad to be here. I just flew in from being the moon, and boy, are my arms tides.
Whoa. Thank you so much for all your hard work up there. I really, I've been a big admirer for a long time, so that's nice to put a face to a name.
Well, I just can't resist pulling. Before we clasp our hands in prayer and address the stories that are this week's worshipful news, let's have a look at the front cover of the magazine. Front cover this week is Taika Waititi hitting his straps as the new hot fun time daddy slash chaotic neutral slash quirky Jeff Goldblum type for those people with a sex hard on for that, which turns out to be most, most people like that. Are you a Taika Waititi fan, Jos?
I have been for a very long time. I think his films are great. I think he seems like a lovely guy. He does seem to be going mad. And I can't work out whether that's in a way I think is really cool and fun and playful and admirable, or I don't know what the end result is. He seems to be just surrounded by all the most famous and kind of cool people in the world now, and he can do literally whatever he wants. And so far, he seems to be using that power for good. But I guess I've got my eye on him. He seems to be an excitable person who can do literally anything, and you never know where that could lead.
It's amazing that the work he's doing hasn't become worse as he's like as he has like infinite capacity to do, like you said, whatever he wants. I'm waiting till the guys with my kind of body type become the weird, like, ooh, this is the hot thing now. Just like kind of a series of gentle circles, one on top of the other, kind of a Jason Alexander essence. That's what I'm excited for.
Yeah, it's a shame that he seems to be pegged as everyone's sort of weird crush or whatever. But actually, you look at him and you go, he's just a very
handsome guy.
There's nothing strange about
him. He used to be sort of our man on the inside, a kind of a dorky comedian type who was really excited to be there. And now he's become unstoppably f***able, which is a dangerous...
It seems like with every career accolade, his jawline gets sharper and sharper.
Yes.
And it's just like, what kind of deal did you make with whom... Who books that jawline is what I want to say.
I could imagine him ending up like a sort of an Elon Musk type. That's my only worry. Is he's at the moment he's still great. I'm a big fan, but I wonder where it ends. Like, he's the kind of person that could go like, yeah, I'm going to live on the moon and I'm going to take all of us with me, and everyone would go, yeah, great, we love that idea. But actually, at some point, you've got to go, this has to stop. We've got to rein this guy in.
I don't know how good the Thor movies were. We can't just have him taking us on the moon.
The satirical cartoon this week is a panel of television executives brainstorming an idea, and one of them says, what if we had a circus made out of bread, and it's full of people competing to have sex with a hot man who has his shirt off, and it's on an island in prison, and they're all famous from other reality television shows? Top story this week is doing a runner news. There's a man in Chile who got paid 286 times his salary and did what I think we all might do, Josh Gondelman, you've run away forever and changed your name. Can you unpack this story for us?
Yeah, look, I'm a guy that runs from conflict, so this dude is near and dear to my heart. So he got 286 times his monthly salary in an error, and he said he was going to give it back, and then he just disappeared. And I respect his decisiveness. Last week, a guy at a coffee cart gave me an extra dollar in change when I bought a breakfast burrito, and I stared at it sweating for a full minute and then gave it back. So I like that this guy just knew what he wanted and went for it. He was paid. I did the conversion. It was 165,398,851 Chilean pesos, which is about 175,000 US dollars. So he got like a dentist's yearly salary in his bank account and just went full DB Cooper, which is awesome. And that is a lot of money to come into in a month, right? But it's not much that you never need to work again. So yeah, it's going to be tough explaining the gap on your resume when you come back. Like, is this right here from 2022 to 2026, you were off the grid living like a king? Can you unpack that for me? But not only am I rooting for this guy, I hope the company learns a lesson. It's like, oh, it's hard to reach someone to get a payment error straightened out. Oh, how do you like it? Not fun, huh? Maybe that's a customer service lesson for corporations, and I think they need to take it to heart.
Well, the people he works for are one of the largest producers of cold cuts in Chile, which makes it ironic that this is one of the deepest burns that could possibly be executed. I mean, among other things, what it says is to the company which is pretending to be your family by keeping you late, f*** you, which I think is something we've all wanted to say to large corporations. Joss?
I was amazed with this story, the fact that it said, I guess this makes sense, but it said that the company only noticed their error after processing their accounts. And it just made me really reflect on the difference between my life and the life of whoever runs the largest producer of cold cuts in Chile. Because I think if I ever paid somebody 300 times what I was supposed to pay them, I think I would notice immediately, like the very next time I tried to pay for anything, I'd go, oh, all my money is gone. So it just made me marvel at the idea that they just were able to sit around for a while and then go, hang on, we messed up. I think we got something wrong. I really like that on two separate occasions, apparently, he promised he was going to give it back. He said, yeah, I'm going to go to the bank today. And then he didn't show up at the bank. So I think a week later, they wrote to him again and said, can we just check that you are paying that back? And he went, yeah, I'm going to pay that back. And then he disappeared. So it wasn't even the immediacy of the smash and grab. He had that week there where he was like, maybe I don't know, I'll think about it. And then eventually went, yeah, I'm out.
No, he was spending that week being like, what's my new name going to be? What's a cool name I've always wanted to have?
I mean, this is the relationship behavior of a commitment phobe. No, sure.
It's going to be
really
fine, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be great. And all the time you're planning your escape to Hawaii with all of her podcasts. I don't know what people steal when they leave relationships in the modern age.
I want to know if he was coming into work that week in the middle where they were just like, hey, bud, any updates? And he's like, oh, yeah, just slicing those cold cuts.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Just been too swamped.
That's a nice diamond ring you have on there.
Yeah. No. I've just been up to my eyeballs and ham. Just no chance to go to the bank.
Yeah, it's on my list. It's the very next thing on my list is I'm going to pay you back that.
Totally.
Your ad section now, because you can't be what you can't buy. And this episode of the podcast is brought to you by the assertion that billionaires keep buying media companies and boosting cryptocurrencies in order to protect freedom, particularly freedom of speech. They definitely do not want access to unregulated forms of power in order to manipulate consumers and investors to make their money into more money. They have so much money, surely they can't want more. That would be irrational, deranged, greed without end, a belly with a black hole in the middle, and probably quite a sad way to exist. Billionaires. I'm sure they're fine. Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by nature. Nature. It's only beautiful if you blur your eyes. Otherwise, up close, it's just things eating each other alive. Mm-hmm. I've been living on a boat, so I've been watching a lot of birds murdering each other.
Yeah, I didn't know they did that. Herons, right?
All of them. They're all in a constant state of murdering each other. I saw some gulls murdering a heron. I saw a coot murdering another
some
coot.
Some gulls?
A seagull gang. There is a murder gull. The first day I arrived, I saw it carrying off a live rat. The next day, I saw it dismembering a pigeon. The third day, I saw it dismembering another pigeon next to the body of a crow. At that point, I was like, it's not even eating what it kills. It just has a taste for blood.
Yeah. This is gang violence. It's just protecting its turf.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of swans near my boat at the moment. Ooh. And I've just never been so conscious that they're an overhyped, violent giraffe duck.
Yeah, they're huge.
Only the queen can or would want to eat a swan, I think.
Do you reckon she does?
I reckon she eats them alive.
Yeah. Bites their heads off. She's allowed.
And if you've just squirted lemon juice in your eyes, a quick way to distract yourself from the agonizing existential despair of living in the modern world, but it's turned out not to help with that and in fact only hurts your eyes on top of everything else, try rinsing your eyeball with half a glass of water.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now it's time for your octopus boom news, which sounds like the funnest rave where everyone's arms are up in the air. Jos Norris, you love an octopus. Can you unpack this story for us?
I do. Well, their fellow octopus lovers are going to really enjoy this one because there is a currently opinion is split as to whether it's a boom or a plague of octopuses off the coast of Cornwall. The story basically is a kind of a back and forth between two people who occupy each side of this debate. There is a fisherman called Chris Chesterfield who is very upset. This fisherman has been trying to pull up shellfish catches and has been unable to because he keeps catching 100 times more octopus than he normally would. He's said that it's very difficult to pull octopuses up in a lobster pot because you only have 2 arms to pull them up and an octopus has 8 arms to pull them down. And I initially thought it was quite strange that you would assume that the only reason for your kind of superiority as a human over the marine world is because you have arms and fish don't. But then as soon as you picture a whole trawlerman's net full of thousands of fish and they've all got arms, you do actually realise actually that it would be tough. Mm-hmm. And presumably when he pulls them up, the first thing they do is sort of slap him around the face. So it is a relief, actually. There's the other side of it is there is a guy called Matt Slater from the Cornwall Wildlife Trust who is very excited about this octopus boom because he's a huge fan of octopuses. He's been training octopuses in his area to recognise his own face for a long time because he wants to build human bonds because they're such intelligent animals.
Only his face?
I think only his face at the moment. At the moment, it's a real kind of vanity project.
Is he trying to build bonds with octopuses or is he trying to build an army out of octopuses?
Yeah, I think he's on the same kind of path as Taika Waititi towards who knows what kind of egomaniac end.
Maybe it's a peaceful thing. It's all out of love and he's just polyoctopus.
Yeah, he just loves to be around them. My favourite thing about this story is that it tries to kind of keep the balance between these two sides through the whole thing about, on the one hand, it's bad for fishermen, they're eating the catches. On the other hand, it's great for octopus and for wildlife diversity and things. And it tries to give them each equal time in the story. But then the final paragraph says that Chris Chesterfield, the fisherman, says that he humanely dispatches his octopus catch quickly with a knife between the eyes to the creature's central brain. This is so we haven't got them crawling all over the boat like in previous years, he says. They were long, hard days until we found that out, which is one of my favourite images I've come across for ages, of weeks of hordes of octopus crawling around the deck of a boat and one guy trying to stab them in every orifice to work out how to do it. So ultimately, I think this article comes down on the side of they must be culled and slaughtered. It's so violent.
Very upsetting. Josh Gondelman, how do you feel about octopuses?
Personally, I love them. However, I think in this situation, the fishermen have to act and they have to act quickly. Because, look, the octopuses are stealing the food out of the fishermen's pots, and the fishermen should be embarrassed. They're gonna let a bunch of sea creatures with pudding for bones be the Netflix to their Blockbuster Video? No, you can't let this happen. You can't just lie there and let the octopuses put you out of business. If that happened to me, if an octopus was putting me out of work, I would be too humiliated to even go on the record and admit it. I would just lie and make up a reason my business was going so badly. I'd be like, it's inflation. It's happening all over. Like, I know that an octopus is smart. I have a lot of respect for them. But has one octopus in history baked a single cake? Has one octopus ever even developed the generic form of an antiviral medication? Never. So all these fisher people just sound like, oh, that four-year-old beat me at chess, but she's a prodigy, so it's fine. Stop making excuses and defeat the octopuses. Our dignity as a species depends on it.
Yeah, the worst thing about being defeated by an octopus is they make you high-five them six times, not eight. Two are legs, but only they know which two.
This isn't the first time it's happened. It feels like there was in the 1940s it happened once, and then in 1899 they called it another plague of octopuses. But I don't take that very seriously, because in 1989 a lot of anything they would just call a plague, like octopuses, yes, runny noses, Jews. They just call it a plague every time, and so I'm a little skeptical.
Now it's time for your reviews section. Review section now. As you know, each week we ask our guest editors to bring in something to review. Jos Norris, what have you brought in for us?
I would like to review the experience of finding out the names of the gibbons in London Zoo for free. This is a great experience that I managed to stumble across this week. There's a section of fence in Regent's Park where you can get a perfect view of the gibbons if you walk past. And if you go there at the right time of day, then you can end up eavesdropping on a school group as they're going past and being given all the information about the gibbons. So if you stand there and hide in the bushes in just the right way, it's actually possible to find out what they're called. I would say that the sort of unique combination of the kind of cozy familiarity of finding out the name of a funny animal so that you can address it personally next time you go by, mixed with the sort of the illicit thrill of knowing that that information wasn't supposed to be for you and that you got it at an extremely discounted rate, those two things coming together makes this genuinely one of the best things that has ever happened to me in my life, and I give it 6 out of 5.
Wow. That's highly a bold recommended move.
Pop down. If you get it at the right time of day, or I can just tell you their names, but I won't tell you live on air because I think it'll spoil it for so many others.
Mm-hmm. The experience is what you're there for, not just the knowledge. Yeah. It's about the learning.
It's the journey, not the destination.
Exactly. You got to go down.
Josh, what have you brought in for us?
I'm brought in pesto to review. Yeah. You surprised in your faces because pesto went away for a while. We weren't seeing a lot of old pee hanging out in pastas and on sandwiches. And recently, like a person from college whose name you truly forgot until like suddenly you have a friend that does trivia with them and now you see them every week again. You're like, hey, it's back. And you know what? It's not bad. It's kind of a John Travolta in Pulp Fiction kind of thing, where every chef in New York City is Quentin Tarantino going, you know what? I think pesto still got it, and we're going to show the world. I've had pesto on a sandwich. I've had pesto on a pasta recently. It's inescapable. It's unavoidable. It's back. 3.5 out of 5 stars for our old friend pesto.
Very nice. 3.5. I feel like pesto was always 3.5.
Pesto. Oh, right. But for the last 20 or so years, it's been like, pesto's probably like 2 stars, right? And then it's back, and you're like, 3.5. I remember now.
Still quite good.
Yep. So it's green, but it doesn't taste especially healthy. That's fun. It's vegetable adjacent.
I remember when pesto was 4 stars or 4.5, and that was when it first came into cafes, and it was like very sophisticated. That was just pre-sushi.
Yes.
I remember it was pesto on things and then Japanese food.
Then we had sushi. We're like, pesto, get out of here, bud. You've had your moment in the sun.
Yeah, pesto too complex. We want the clean, refreshing flavors of Japanese cooking. Your next section is pre-crime news. There is an AI which, despite having presumably watched the movie with Tom Cruise, has started to predict crime with 90% accuracy. I have not watched that movie because when it was out, my brother watched it first and he said it has weird eye stuff, and that's a thing for me. I don't like
Same.
Weird eye stuff.
Yeah, I don't like weird eye stuff.
So somebody who has watched this, Jos Norris, can you unpack this story for us?
Yes, so this is an AI that is able to predict the type of crime and the location of a crime with 90% accuracy within the next week. There's a lot of kind of concerns over it, over whether it kind of reinforces racial bias in policing and that kind of thing. The thing I wonder about most, when I read about it, I thought of Minority Report, but then I also thought, actually, I wonder whether it works more like the, you know, the witch's prophecies in Macbeth, where the fact that he's given the prophecy that he's going to be king is the thing that then makes him become king, mm-hmm. and then they give him the prophecy that says, this is how you're going to die, and it's him trying to avoid that that ends up making him die in that way, that self-fulfilling prophecy thing. So I wonder whether actually what this AI does is maybe it sends some kind of alert to people it thinks might be criminals in the local area and goes, you're going to commit a crime this week. And then they go, well, I guess I can't fight my destiny, so I now have to go out and commit that crime. So actually it's kind of creating the crime that it predicts in order to give itself its perfect track record. And actually I think this computer is organizing crime in the area in order to be patted on the back and be told, wow, you're a really kind of intelligent AI, well done. So I reckon it's playing a lot with people's fears of destiny and fate and that kind of thing. And I think they should shut it down. It sounds dangerous to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big fear. If you don't commit the crime you're predicted to commit, then you might end up f***ing your mother. And that's
Yeah, exactly.
Stressful.
That's
yeah.
bad.
Yeah. That's it's only when you fight that. Against it that it all happens. So I guess they just go, I've got to go with it.
You might as well do the mail fraud or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it would depend on the level of crime.
Yeah.
If it tells you you're going to steal a bottle of milk today, then you'll go, well, yeah, fine.
Sure. Yeah.
They're hoping to use it to sort of inform high-level policy decisions rather than direct allocation of resources to the location,
yeah.
because, as we know, if you send a policeman to police a pre-crime area anticipating a crime, if there is no crime, the policeman feels obliged to commit the crime while they're there. Does that count as politics? Probably. Ring the bell, Peg. Josh?
So this system can predict crime allegedly with, like, 90% accuracy, which sounds good, but, like, 10% going to jail for a crime you didn't commit is bad. That's too much.
Yeah.
It's leaving too much to chance, right? It's like, oh, it's essentially they're like, if you go out, if you're like 90% chance of rain, you bring an umbrella, doesn't rain, no harm, no foul. But if you're like over policing an area because 90% chance of crime, 10% chance of Les Miserables, I think, is what might happen. Is you just someone gets pinched for taking a loaf of bread bottle of milk as we were talking about. The creator of the system said in an interview specifically that it's not Minority Report, right? The Tom Cruise movie. They said specifically, which is troubling. First of all, yeah. it's false. A few years ago in Chicago, they tried an attempt to use similar technology, and it just like more than half of the black men in the area were like caught up in this AI system. So it literally was a Minority Report. Also, it is a giant red flag when you're defending your technology against specific dystopian allegations.
Yeah.
Like, look, I'm opening this theme park for dinosaurs. And last time that happened, the dinosaurs ate a bunch of people. But I swear this time it's not Jurassic Park, The Lost World.
It'd be great if they have to get to a point where you have to pre-explain which dystopian fiction you're going for. And go, this one, we're sort of going for a Brave New World thing. So we promise it's probably one of the better dystopias of the ones that are available. But it is going to be one of them.
And if you think that certain groups commit more crimes than others, think about all the times you walked past a policeman and they were like, you're fine.
It is very much like, look, we know the system's always been racist in the past. We promise this time we're going to be on our very, very best behavior and not perpetuate centuries of racism, which you can't make humans not do that. Like, human police always do that. And you think this machine is like, yeah, I got this.
The way you build an AI is by feeding it all the information that you have, and then it learns from that information and then does the thing that it anticipates will be required from the information of all of the terrible things you've done in the past.
And they go, oh no, this turned out terribly. What did we do wrong?
I'd rather just an artificial ignorance in this case. It's just like, I don't know, seems fine.
Give it no information and then see what it comes
up with. Just a robot that's like, oh boy, wow, the world, scary place.
I seem to be really stupid.
Just a robot
baby. But at least I'm pure. I'm innocent.
And we interrupt this broadcast to announce the winner of the inaugural Dancy Lagarde Literary Tribute Competition. Previous winners include Neil Gaiman and Dancy Lagarde in disguise as themselves, now disqualified from entering again. Lucky you! Our judges enjoyed all of the submissions incredibly. It was just an absolute delight to read all of the just f***ing nonsense that people sent in. Without further ado, I will announce the runners-up of the Dancy Lagarde Literary Tribute Competition, which included Sarah Marcotte, who wrote chapter one of, and a title page, of The Crystal Throne. It was a very good piece of work. You can see the full piece of work linked at my patreon.com/AliceFraser. Extracts will follow. Second runner-up, in no particular order, all the runners-up were equal in my heart. They're all winners to me. Andrew Bates, who submitted chapter 68 of A Hill to Call My Own, entitled In Which Our Heroine Bears Her Heart, Soul and Creamy Breasts, and Melts a Heart of Iron with Steamy Passion. That is also linked in my Patreon announcement post. And Nora von Chokstrakoff, who was submitted their piece via the dedicated amanuensis Aaron Goodisman, writing a tantalizingly delicious chapter 7 of Down for the Count, if you'll remember that one. The winner is Pips Pollard with their magnificent chapter 14 of Dark Bridges of the Heart, entitled Sexy Cage of Destiny's Desires. I highly recommend you head over to my Patreon and read these runners-up and the winner. I will extract further passages for your delectation in the coming weeks. Congratulations, everyone who entered. Congratulations to the winners and the runners-up. The winner wins £200 in real money and £1,000 in imaginary cryptocurrency and their name written in my non-distributed ledger. And the runners-up win £50 each. Thank you. I look forward to next year's Dancy Lagarde Literary Tribute Competition. And now it's time for your lettuces making rabbits high news, because rabbits get made high by lettuce, according to the news. Salad varieties, particularly like iceberg lettuce, the most boring of lettuces to us, are apparently the most exciting of lettuces to rabbits, known as lettuce opium, giving rabbits a mild sensation of euphoria that it can be dangerous in high doses. Josh Gondelman, you're a fiend for cocaine. Can you unpack this story?
Okay. So rabbits apparently are getting these mild euphoric sensations from this compound in iceberg and other lettuces. And they say that we shouldn't give lettuce to rabbits. That's what the thrust of this report is. And I say, why not? Why can't rabbits have a good time? What do they need to do that they can't be high for? Are they going to be operating a forklift? Do their kids need help with math homework? What could possibly go wrong if the rabbits get a little stoned? And then, like you said, the iceberg lettuce contains a compound known as lettuce opium, which does sound like a trick to get humans to eat more iceberg lettuce. Like, from the people that brought you runner's high, it's heroin salad. Give it a shot. And apparently, there's lots of other things that are not healthy for rabbits that we think of as rabbit food, right? Like carrots have more sugar than a rabbit needs in their dessert, so rabbits shouldn't be eating carrots. And that blew my mind, because basically at this point, everything I know about rabbits appears incorrect. Next thing, we'll find out that they don't even f*** that much, and they never dress up as a sexy lady to trick hunters.
Jos, what have you been feeding your rabbits?
I haven't had one since I was a kid. I had one that I think we probably did feed all the wrong stuff to, a lot of lettuce and a lot of carrots and a lot of that kind of thing. I do think that this is an irresponsible story, because I think the immediate panic reaction obviously is going to be that responsible rabbit owners everywhere cut out lettuce and carrots and all that stuff immediately. And I think that creates a real risk of throwing rabbits into withdrawal very, very suddenly. Like, if they've kind of acclimatized to a diet of lettuce opium and suddenly that's taken away from them, I don't know what the symptoms of lettuce withdrawal are, but I imagine it's that scene in Trainspotting has to be close, I think. That has to have been modelled on something. So I think what we're going to end up with is potentially kind of horrific scenes of rabbits breaking into greengrocers and trying to steal what they need at gunpoint, just sort of real deprived stuff.
Isn't that
and I'm,
the story
I'm worried
of Peter
about it.
Rabbit?
I'm scared. Oh, yeah, that's exactly, yeah. I think we risk bringing it true. And that was a cautionary tale that we were told when we were very small. So I think we've got to learn the lesson, wean them off it, I think. And find, you know, put it in little doses in something else and help them find their way back to a healthy diet. I think if we just stop, it's going to be a nightmare.
I don't think anyone's prepared for an aggressive rabbit uprising.
It's going to be hell.
rabbits can't go cold turkey. Cold turkey, no. Of course, is the industry where you accidentally get paid 286 times more than your salary. We can't have rabbits with that kind of money and drug dependencies.
And that brings us to the end of this week's episode of The Gargle. I'm flipping through the ad section at the back. Flippity, flippity, flip. Josh Gondelman, have you got anything to plug other than your special, which is out, which I watched, which is great?
Oh my gosh, thank you. That's all I have. I have a new stand-up special called People Pleaser. It's available internationally, worldwide, depending on where you are. Vimeo, I think, is worldwide, and then it's Amazon Prime and Apple TV and YouTube. So wherever you are, it's available for sale or for rent, and I would love if people watched it, if you enjoyed my news broadcasting on The Gargle.
Jos Norris, what have you got to plug?
I am working on a new show which will be at the Edinburgh Fringe in August. It's called Blink. It's about a paranoid megalomaniac magician who thinks he can control everybody's minds at the same time. And that's on at the Pleasance in August at 8:20.
Like all magicians?
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's about all magicians. So if people go to josnorris.co.uk or follow me on Twitter at josnorris, then they can see all the things about the show dates and that kind of thing. I'd love to see you there.
I am Alice Fraser. You can find me online at alliterative, A-L-I-T-E-R-A-T-I-V-E, on Twitter and Instagram. Also my Patreon, which is a one-stop shop for all of my stand-up specials, podcasts, and blogs. That's at patreon.com/AliceFraser. It also has my weekly Tea with Alice salons, which is where we do a chat. We have a conversation. I'm also doing a live chat this weekend. If you want to meet me in person in London, subscribe to the Patreon and I'll tell you where I am. Is that weird? It's probably weird.
No, that's good.
If you would like to be part of The Gargle, become one of our roving reporters by tweeting us with all the stories that you think are funny at Hello Garglers on Twitter. Matthew Collins sent in the pre-crime story and Miss Otis sent in the drugs bunny story. This is an Alice Fraser and Bugle Podcasts production. I am Alice Fraser. Your editor is Ped Hunter. Executive producer is Chris Skinner. And I'll talk to you again next week.
You can listen to other programs from The Bugle, including The Bugle, The Last Post, Tiny Revolutions, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
And this episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Imposter Kings, a game of cards written by one of our very Gargle listeners. Yes, it's my favourite, a listener-funded ad read in the show that's moderately famous for its fake ads. It's a game within a game, unlike this game, which is just a game within a box that you can buy. But it's a competitive strategic card game with tons of replayability and variations created by someone who you already know has good taste because they listen to the podcast that you are listening to right now. The Imposter Kings is a travel-sized fun pack lovingly created by a small independent designer who is passionate about quality, but in a platonic way. Go online to imposterkings.com and see all the pictures on the cards as a little sneak preview. I just did, and they are genuinely amazing. Unlike the cryptocurrency trading market, it is easy to learn this game, but difficult to master. And I'm assured by people who like fun that you will like this if you also enjoy other nerdy competitive card games like Hearthstone and Magic the Gathering. But it is also accessible to casual gamers and even, horrifyingly, children. This is The Imposter Kings. The creator is giving a 20% discount for Gargle listeners using the code THEGARGLE. That's capital THE, Gargle. Go online to imposterkings.com now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.